He could sit at a typewriter and get messages from these beings faster than his fingers could respond. It gradually developed that the strange languages came from an amazing tight-knit group of advanced personalities in a different dimension of life who were developing Mark Propert as their mouthpiece or telephone to this world. They were practicing to get Mark into good operating condition. They had a purpose and a program to fulfill, hence the persistence of their voices, which still spoke in hard-to-understand foreign tongues. The foreign language barrier proved a very great handicap to Meadlane and to the researchers who were trying to interpret the messages. They made persistent efforts to see if the communicators could not bring forth them sages in the English language. Fantastic as it may seem, this was eventually accomplished, at least to a degree of understandable English. However, even today the unseen communicators often start out in Chinese or something resembling Sanskrit, or some other very ancient language which represented the communicator's mother tongue at one time on Earth. 126. Then after they warm up, so to speak, they switch to English. Many times they have been asked how they are able to do this. The only reply they give is that they shift their thought pattern to English. They also have stated that the entire activity represents a very complicated handling and control of energy from their plane of existence to ours. They even have to draw energy from Irene Probert as well as supply some of their own energy to make the hookup work. Apparently they regard it all as a bit of a miracle themselves. The type of English transmitted incidentally cannot be called fluent, except in the case of those mentors whose mother tongue was English, or who for some reason or another had occasion to talk it fluently at some time. Otherwise it resembles a foreigner speaking English, with a decided accent. His mentors, or teachers as Mark Propert prefers to call them, gradually began to reveal and introduce themselves. Mark was as amazed and astounded as anyone when this cosmic who's who began to unfold to him. In fact, he is still surprised to this day that he, Mark Propert, is actually a part of a circle of such vast cosmic knowledge and intelligence and its effort to bring certain information to Earth. The inner circle is composed of 16 advanced beings, all of whom at one time or another experienced Earth life, some of them fairly recently, others thousands of years ago. Utilizing his clairvoyant ability on one occasion, six of these beings suddenly without any warning showed themselves to Mark. They were arrayed in the costumes and colors which they wore at one time while on Earth. Mark told us that this sudden event almost frightened him out of his wits. He was in his home, and he tripped over a chair in his panic to run out of the house. But since he has come to know them and practically live with them, they are now like a loving family, only they are in a higher phase of life while Mark and Irene live on the Earth plane. The higher mentors guard and watch over the Earth members as if they were children of their special care. At times, they exert amazing powers of assistance which only those close to the Properts know anything about. No one can use Mark as a channel to Earth without their express permission. The head of the group is an advanced being of exceptional wisdom and kindliness called the Yardadishi'ite. The word Yarda means high priest. He lived in a very ancient civilization on Earth called Juoyuga, over 500,000 years ago, located in the region of the Himalayan mountains. Another member of the group is Ramon Natali, who was an astronomer in Rome, Italy, in the 17th century and was a friend of Galileo. Still another member is the ancient Chinese philosopher Lotz. Others include a Maharaja and individuals who were teachers, physicians and holy men. There are also several interesting women in the group. Three of the 16 members of the circle have not yet disclosed themselves, but Mark has been told they will at the right time. Mark Propert himself is an interesting and very likable individual. He is of medium height and decidedly on the slender side. He possesses the most expressive face, the most mobile face, we have ever seen. Emotions are pictured on it instantly as on a screen. Certain Hollywood actors whom he knows have urged him to use this ability in the motion picture field, but he has declined because of his amazing relationship to the inner circle. He loves to paint in either oils or watercolors, and this is his dearest hobby. His ability along this line is remarkable, as he has never had a painting lesson in his life. He has used this ability to paint the portraits of various members of the inner circle. Mark and his wife are both excellent company. He is witty, full of fun, enjoys a good laugh, and is totally unassuming. There are those who claim that Mark is the inner circle himself subconsciously. Nothing amuses Mark more than this. The idea that somehow he, Mark, is himself the sum total of all the cosmic wisdom and experience of his great teachers sends him into peals of laughter. We have all had some good laughs at this and have agreed with Mark that if this is the case, the world has certainly overlooked its greatest citizen. In our research efforts, we have had the privilege of being with Mark and Irene many times while these advanced beings of the inner circle have expressed themselves through Mark. Sometimes Mark will sit down at his typewriter and simply type the dictation of his teachers like a stenographer, which he hears as clearly as if they were talking in the room. They have dictated two entire books to him in this manner, and they expect to dictate two more. As a sidelight, we might add that they sometimes use words unfamiliar to Mark. In this case, he takes the words down phonetically and later verifies them by the aid of a good-sized dictionary. His mentor's knowledge of English words and word meanings is simply extraordinary. Their avowed purpose is to educate human beings, to help lift mankind out of its ignorance into greater cosmic knowledge, and to demonstrate the actuality and feasibility of useful contacts with higher spheres of life. Mark's ability is not used for personal problems or trivial things. On other occasions, the manner of communication is different. Mark Propert goes to sleep, and the members of the inner circle use his voice as their own. In this case, they even control his gestures. There is nothing spooky or offensive about this whatever. It is always done in full daylight or in a fully lighted room. The whole thing has an incredible naturalness about it. It seems as if one is conversing directly with members of the inner circle, which is just what one is doing. We found to our amazement that they can talk on any subject of human interest in brilliant fashion. They can hold their own with any group of the Earth's scientists, astronomers, philosophers, metaphysicians, doctors, teachers or government officials, and can show them unsuspected hidden errors in their theories and practices and help them in a kindly way. We feel it is too bad that university groups, engineering societies, astronomical researchers, philosophical and metaphysical groups, do not avail themselves of this amazing and useful contact with higher beings. We feel sure that the inner circle would do its part. With one proviso, the motives and interest must be constructive and educational, not destructive. The inner circle at times gives lectures before worthy groups, with a question and answer period at the end. These beings of the inner circle evidently live in a higher plane of consciousness than ours, where they can observe and study anything they wish to on this earth. At the same time, they have access to endless information regarding still higher planes of existence. They have explained to us that it is possible for men to tune into realms of life so advanced that these realms have little relationship to Earth life. Very advanced beings who have never experienced Earth life are not particularly interested in Earth man, who to them is still almost in an ant-like stage of development compared to their own. In other words, the inner circle informed us that Earth man can tune so high in outer space that he will not receive much practical help, or tuned so low that the information received is useless. We must learn to contact the groups who are interested in us, feel a responsibility toward us, and are in a position to help us. All the inner circle members did take part in Earth life at one time or another, and thus still have a keen interest in helping Earth man to progress from his three-dimensional prison. The Mark Propert activity was planned with this in view and with the full consent of Mark Propert himself. Otherwise it would not be possible. The thing that made a great impression on us was this: they of the inner circle are never dictatorial in anything they say or do. While they seem to possess an endless cosmic perspective, no legend wisdom, they never say, do this, or do that. Nor do they ever say, this is the truth, the absolute truth, take it or leave it. All they say is, this is our viewpoint, but if you cannot accept it, you are entitled to your own viewpoint. Somehow or other, We have always expected that great advanced beings would be like this, and we have not been disappointed. We believe our readers will be interested in one particular experience we had. The Propets had come to our home in San Diego, and we were all seated and conversing in our living room. Suddenly Mark paused and said in a matter-of-fact way, remonstratively, "The astronomer and scientist is here." Before we knew it, with Mark's help, we were all engaged in an amazingly natural conversation with this great intelligence. As an engineer, I was very much interested in the installation at Riverside, California, where universal energy is being used to prevent freezing of an orange grove. I asked our unseen scientist if he was familiar with it. He replied, "No, but please wait just a moment." We waited. In a few minutes he returned knowing all about the installation. We discussed it in great detail, but something was bothering me. How had he been able to inspect a technical installation 110 miles distant, find out all about it and return in about 2 minutes of Earth time? Finally I summoned up enough courage to ask our visitor. His reply staggered us, and we shall never forget it. He simply said, "I did not have to go anywhere. There is no here nor there. There is no place to go to, or come from, but mind." After becoming acquainted with the inner circle and sensing something of its integrity, its cosmic viewpoint, and its kindliness, we found ourselves eager to ask them a series of questions on flying saucers. The prospect of clarifying some of the flying saucer phenomena and verifying other OSC data regarding them through the viewpoint of these intelligences really intrigued us. However, we decided to move slowly. We did not know how the inner circle would react to this. While in Mexico, we had read a recently published book which disturbed us. It referred to flying saucers, the new age ahead, and indulged in some rather disturbing predictions. We decided, before approaching the subject of their saucers, to find out if the inner circle would be willing to help clarify some of the disturbing points in this book. We prevailed upon Mark and Irene to ask the inner circle if they would endeavor to do this. They graciously expressed their willingness to answer questions relating to this book. Believe it or not, friends, in this manner there came about an inter-world or inter-frequency or inter-dimensional book review. Beforehand we prepared a summary of the main points of the book. One after the other we read these points to the inner circle with Mark acting as cosmic telephone. One by one a member of the inner circle commented upon these points. We recorded the complete review on our tape recorder. We sat back thunderstruck at their instant grasp of complicated questions, their piercing, instantaneous and unprejudiced analysis, and their forthright replies, never dictatorial, always logical, loving, and always with the attitude, "Don't take us as final authority. This is the way we see it, but you are entitled to disagree." We all felt a lifting of fear which the book had subtly engendered in us, and we shall always be grateful for the clarification of thought which came to us in this strange manner. Incidentally, the inner circle themselves seemed both amused at and grateful for our inter-world book review. We left not knowing who enjoyed it most, we or they. This encouraged us to ask them, with Irene Probert's help, if they would please consider answering some direct questions on flying saucers. The reply was that while they felt they had already answered many questions regarding the discs as they called them through their work with Midlane, nevertheless they would be glad to answer our questions on a certain date. This gave us the opportunity we were looking for, and we lost no time in preparing the questions. In so doing, we had you, the reader, in mind. We did our best to include those questions which we felt that you, as well as we, would be most interested in. The next chapter will give you the direct questions on saucers and the direct answers as they were received from the inner circle. We want our readers to share with us a taste of the direct communication which we have had with these high intelligences in this unusual manner so that all may judge for themselves the quality of the information thus received. Please note that we make no claims that the inner circle represents the ultimate in authority in such matters. They would not want us to make such a claim. However, in our opinion, these beings have a tremendous cosmic outlook and are worth listening to. Perhaps if we are open-minded enough, we may be able to learn a great deal from them. In this age, we must break away from the old and develop new sources of cosmic information. Chapter 18. The Inner Circle answers questions on flying saucers. This chapter presents an example of OSC or outer space communication, that is, information obtained from communicating with beings living in a different phase of life from our own three-dimensional phase. As explained in the previous chapter, with the assistance of Mark Probert acting as the cosmic telephone of this two-way communication, we asked the Inner Circle a series of questions regarding flying saucers. Both the questions and the answers are given below. Some of them are given practically verbatim. Others have been edited and condensed for the sake of clarity and in order to keep within the space limitations of this book. In a few cases where our question was evidently not clearly understood or we did not clearly understand the answer, the matter was cleared up by questions on other occasions. The punctuation, italics, arrangement and of course the notations are our own. In every case we have made diligent effort to preserve the substance and meaning of their replies, so far as we understood them. A few of the questions refer more to the critical conditions now facing our civilization than to the saucers themselves. Q. Is it true that so-called flying saucers or spaceships are coming to Earth at this time? There are still many skeptics who say that they are nothing but balloons, secret weapons, stars, temperature inversions, illusions, etc. A. 1. Yes, it is true. It is of little use to make further effort to convince anybody. As to those who are still standing on the rim of belief, it is better to leave them stand there. Is it not so that life concerns you individually? You need have little concern whether somebody else goes along the path with you. Q. 2. Some say that spaceships have been coming for many thousands of years and that our ancestors knew about them. Is this true? A. 2. In the early period of the Earth's affairs when man was beginning to show signs of thinking, space beings came to Earth and instructed man on various secret things, not only regarding the planetary system but regarding their own inner living as well. Some of the greatest teachings man has received came to him by these space beings in order that various civilizations could advance more rapidly. Through enormous periods of time, the spacecraft beings have been making periodic visits to the Earth. All races of men have seen them. 500,000 years ago they were well known to the dwellers in Yu, the civilization of the Himalayas. They would come to do a certain work. And when that work was completed they departed for a period to see how well their efforts would work out. They even came to your American Indians and taught them much and took them for little rides in their ships. Note. The Ardadishiite, the head of the Inner Circle once lived in the civilization referred to above, hence the reference. Q. 3. Is it true that our ancestors had spaceships of their own in antiquity? A. 3. Man had spaceships on the Earth that could move about the Earth in other civilizations and times. But these ships were not interplanetary. They were not of a technique to get out of the gravitational forces of the Earth. Q. 4. Are the governments of the Earth in possession of extensive information on spaceships, and are they withholding this information from the people? A. 4. Yes, they are. They are frightened. They are so educated they are frightened. Too little education makes one superstitious, and too much education makes one twice as superstitious. And so they fear. Q. 5. Have men of Earth recently contacted spaceships in physical form and conversed with the space people in physical form? A. 5. Yes, this has been done many times. 135. Q. 6. Have men of Earth recently gone into spaceships and taken rides? A. 6. They have to a limited extent. Q. 7. Is there an interplanetary government of our solar system? A. 7. Most definitely. There is what is called a hierarchy throughout the entire solar system, throughout the entire galaxies and island universes. Certain groups of individuals are assigned to certain planets and even to solar systems. Then there are other greater beings that watch over an entire galaxy. Note, at this point in the interview, one of us could not refrain from exclaiming, "Some jobble!" This caused considerable amusement. We found these intelligences with whom we were talking to be warm, loving, patient and very human. They enjoy both a joke and even American slang, although sometimes the meaning of the slang has to be explained to them. Q. 8. Are the spaceships which are now in the atmosphere of Earth under the command of such an interplanetary government? A. 8. Yes, they are. Note, in some contexts the hierarchy of planets is referred to as the guardians, planetary guardians. In subsequent research we found that no spaceship, even a visitor or a tourist ship, can enter Earth's atmosphere or land on Earth without permission of the guardians. This took away any fear we previously had of unfriendly ships landing on Earth. Q. 9. Where do the spaceships and space people come from? Some say Venus or other planets of our system. Some say from distant solar systems. Some say outer space or the etheric regions. A. 9. The occupants of these spacecraft are what are exactly called space beings. We can say, and truthfully, that they come from one or more of your bodies in space or planets like Venus or Mars or Uranus, or any or the rest of them, and we can also say that they come from galaxies or island universes many billions and billions of light years from your Earth, measuring time as you measure it. But these space beings are not aware of these gigantic numbers of light years of distance, not aware of this at all. Billions of miles to these beings means nothing. They know what you think along these lines, and that these are your concepts of time and space. But these concepts do not exist for them. These space beings can go any place, visit all bodies wherever they feel it necessary to go. In this sense, we may say that they come from a planet, if you wish. Q. 10. But do they, the guardian ships, originate from a particular planet? A. 10. No. Their origin is not planetary. I reiterate what we ourselves have said many times before. These beings are space beings. If you like the word etheric and can understand it, it means the same thing anyway. They live in other densities or other frequencies, other dimensions of time, other laws of matter in motion, no more than this. This is difficult for man on Earth to understand, very difficult. What are you going to say to those who are not versed in what is called dimensions of time? You are going to say the same thing that your great Einstein said to the man in the street concerning relativity. What did he say? Nothing. It is the most wonderfully informative thing to say to the uninformed. Just nothing. Note, this was said in a humorous vein. As a matter of fact, few groups of advanced beings to our knowledge have worked harder or done more to help Earthman to really understand outer space, spaceships and space beings than the members of the inner circle. See books by Probert and Meadlane in book list. Q. 11. Are planets outside of our system inhabited? A. 11. Among your sky visitors there are some who come from planets and others who come from space. Space is not the vacuous thing it has long been considered. The universe swarms with life of many kinds. Some planets have inhabitants much like yourselves, but on others they differ much in size, weight, density and other characteristics. 137. There are giants and pygmies and all sizes in between. Q. 12. How is it possible for beings like ourselves to live on other planets of our solar system? How is this possible due to the different conditions of gravity, oxygen, pressure, etc.? A. 12. Your scientific astronomical instruments are highly limited and do not always give reliable information. Some of your planets do not have the balance of oxygen you need or the ionosphere necessary to give the same type of protection. Earthman would find it difficult living on these planets for various reasons. Nevertheless, some of them are inhabited by beings with bodies similar to yours. They were born into these environs and therefore are adapted to these conditions. In the same way they would have difficulty living on your Earth. Venus is not as hot as many people think. It has a great band of substance around it that protects it from much of the sun's radiation. Mars is not an unhappy place to live. There is plant life and animal life there besides human life. The moon, at least a great part of it, is uninhabitable for the same reason that your great deserts are uninhabitable. The side you see is desert. But on the other side of the moon there are people who use it as a base to come from space to the moon and from the moon to the Earth. Q. 13. Can you please tell us a little about these space beings? Did they live on the Earth at one time, and are they more advanced than we? A. 13. Many of them have never lived on Earth but were born and live in their own dimensions of time. Technically speaking, many of these beings are advanced from what you are. Philosophically speaking, they are indeed many strides ahead of you, for wars and murders do not prevail. Q. 14. How does our planet compare with others? A. 14. The Earth is a very beautiful spot from space. Indeed, compared with the other planets, it is like a beautiful oasis in the vast sea of space. Q. 15. Are some space people actually on our Earth now? A. 15. Space people can and do mix with your people on Earth. They can even eat your terrible foods without dire results, for they know how to relieve themselves from it without taking a purgative that you would get from your nearest drug store. You see, I have been listening to your radio. Q. 16. Are we also space people? A. 16. You are space people yourselves in a very definite sense of that word. You originated from a higher dimension or frequency and are in the process of waking up and returning there. When you relearn to control matter, you will be able once again to move in and out of the various frequencies or time periods. It is difficult to make you feel this now, and it is something you must approach slowly. Q. 17a. Will you please explain the nature of space travel? We have been told it has several different phases. Note, Q. 17 has, for the sake of clarity, been broken down into several parts. A. 17a. Space-time travel. Between the ships and not only your sun but all suns in space there are great fields of energy. When these space beings start moving in what you call space-time, miles per hour type of travel in a three-dimension world like ours, it is this solar energy they are working on. They tune to the frequency of certain bands of energy. It is not exactly like a magnetic field. It is substance in a great rate of motion. They contact and control certain bands of light or radiation from the sun. This causes the ships to look as if they are glowing. It produces colors which can run the gamut of the spectrum. The ships are not hot either outside or inside. In fact, they are very comfortable inside. Q. 17b. Just to make the record clear, these spaceships coming from other frequencies have to convert to our frequency in coming into our atmosphere or else we do not see them. Is this correct? A. 17b. That is right. They can be in your atmosphere without your seeing them if they want to be. Q. 17c. When they change their vibratory frequency, it can take them out of our range of both sight and touch. Is this correct? A. 17c. This is right. And nearness also. The moment they go out of what is called your frequency, the moment they do this, they could be on Venus, or close to it, by teleportation. Practically instantaneous. Now your scientists are going to come to know more about this in the course of time. The closest man that has come to it is your late great man Einstein. Q. 18. Can the body of an Earthman stand such a trip distance space travel to higher frequencies? A. 18. Remember that your body is primarily a water body. In taking someone from your Earth to another body in space, that one's body has to be changed. It will have to be changed before it can go into another frequency. It will have to be rechemicalized. there will have to be a polarization of the atomic substance that goes to make up every cell of the body. Q. 19. Is this difficult for the space people to do? A. 19. No, because the space people know how to manipulate matter.